Listening Comprehension Test. You will hear each recording twice. After each listening, you will have time to complete your answers. Task 1. Dylan Thomas. Listen to a podcast about the famous writer Dylan Thomas. While listening, tick the correct answer and add the correct information. You now have time to read the assignments.
Dylan Thomas. 2014 is the centenary of the birth of the poet Dylan Thomas. Scarlett Maguire went to talk to Dr. Leo Mellor, who writes and teaches about 20th century literature, particularly Anglo-Welsh literature and modernism, in Murray Edwards College, Cambridge, where he's the Roma Gill Fellow in English. She started by asking Dr. Mellor, what's so special about Dylan Thomas that the centenary of his birth is being celebrated around the world?
I think it's to do with the way he brings a particular intensity to language, to the way that he writes poems that force or push language into moments of unexpected power and beauty and strangeness. He makes us see everyday things as strange again, and he sees, or he helps us see, a beauty in things that one would not normally consider beautiful.
Like?
I suppose you would think of... I suppose you could think of his most famous radio play, Under Milk Wood, and how he takes the average life of people in a little town, their petty jealousies, their loves, their desires, and transforms them into something that is funny, beautiful, and terribly moving. And it is just one night in one little Bible black town.
Under Milk Wood is celebrated around the English speaking world, so it's much bigger than Wales, isn't it?
Yes, because it's a way of using radio, using a medium where you don't get to see anything. You get to see in your mind's eye the characters who are constructed through how they speak and how they're described by other people and the sound effects. So it's a play that is apparently about a small seaside town in West Wales, but uses the medium to do something quite incredible.
He's most famous for Under Milk Wood, but also there are his poems.
It's important for us to remember how long his career was. He died aged 39, but he was writing poems that people return to again and again. He has never been out of print. But there are also poems that benefit from rereading at different stages in your life, because they start to mean different things and tell you different things. And I think that, for me, would be one of the hallmarks of greatness.
A possible problem for Dylan Thomas is that his poetry is sometimes overshadowed by the stories of his life, most of which appear to be spent in pubs.
There are two sides to this. Partly, it is his own myth-making. He was a larger-than-life personality, and he conjured up stories about his own drinking and his own capacity to drink. So there's a strand coming from him. And there's also a strand of how we want our poets to live fast and die young, to behave badly, to get drunk and fall over. Thomas obviously drank, and drank heavily at points, but no one could have written the poems he wrote and the stories and the journalism and appeared on the radio so much if he was an alcoholic who spent all his time in pubs. He spent a lot of time in pubs because it was a way of meeting people and discussing poetry with his friends. And when he went home, after drinking far less than rumour always has it, he would then write. And he would write and rewrite, and he would work on a poem until he was happy with it. And we can see there have been tremendous exhibitions this year at the National Library of Wales of all his worksheets and archive material that have been lent from the University of Buffalo. And you can see how hard he works at a single line, how hard he works at a single phrase, how hard he works choosing the right word. This is not the action of a man who is a habitual drunk. This is the action of a man who wants to craft poetry.
Now, listen to the recording again.
2014 is the centenary of the birth of the poet Dylan Thomas. Scarlett McGuire went to talk to Dr. Leo Meller, who writes and teaches about 20th century literature, particularly Anglo-Welsh literature and modernism, at Murray Edwards College, Cambridge, where he's the Roma Gill Fellow in English. She started by asking Dr. Meller, what's so special about Dylan Thomas that the centenary of his birth is being celebrated around the world?
I think it's to do with the way he brings a particular intensity to language, to the way that he writes poems that force or push language into moments of unexpected power and beauty. And strangeness. He makes us see everyday things as strange again, and he helps us see a beauty in things that one would not normally consider beautiful.
Like?
I suppose you could think of his most famous radio play, Under Milk Wood, and how he takes the average life of people in a little town, their petty jealousies, their loves, their desires, and transforms them into something that is funny, beautiful, and terribly moving. And it is just one night in one little Bible black town.
Undermilk Wood is celebrated around the English-speaking world. So it's much bigger than Wales, isn't it?
Yes, because it's a way of using radio, using a medium where you don't get to see anything. You get to see in your mind's eye the characters who are constructed through how they speak and how they're described by other people and the sound effects. So it's a play that is apparently about a small seaside town in West Wales, but uses the medium to do something quite incredible.
He's most famous for Undermilk Wood, but also there are his poems.
It's important for us to remember how long his career was. He died aged 39, but he was writing poems that people return to again and again. He has never been out of print, but there are also poems that benefit from rereading at different stages in your life, because they start to mean different things and tell you different things. And I think that, for me, would be one of the hallmarks of greatness.
A possible problem for Dylan Thomas is that his poetry is sometimes overshadowed by the stories of his life, most of which appear to be spent in pubs.
There are two sides to this. Partly, it is his own myth-making. He was a larger-than-life personality, and he conjured up stories about his own drinking and his own capacity to drink. So there's a strand coming from him. And there's also a strand of how we want our poets to live fast and die young, to behave badly, to get drunk and fall over. Thomas obviously drank, and drank heavily at points, but no one could have written the poems he wrote and the stories and the journalism and appeared on the radio so much if he was an alcoholic who spent all his time in pubs. He spent a lot of time in pubs because it was a way of meeting people and discussing poetry with his friends. And when he went home after drinking far less than rumour always has it, he would then write. And he would write and rewrite, and he would work on a poem until he was happy with it. And we can see there have been tremendous exhibitions this year at the National Library of Wales of all his worksheets and archive material that have been lent from University of Buffalo. And you can see how hard he works at a single line, how hard he works at a single phrase, how hard he works choosing the right word. This is not the action of a man who is a habitual drunk. This is the action of a man who wants to craft poetry.
Task 2, Au Pairs. Listen to a talk about au pairs in Britain. While listening, tick the correct answer and add the correct information. You now have time to read the assignments.
It's estimated that there are about 90,000 au pairs in the UK, though there are no official figures. That means tens of thousands of families from Land's End to John O'Groats having au pairs from all around the world looking after their children. A UK nursery place, if you can find one, costs at least £1,000 a month. That's $1,500. And for many families, an au pair is the only affordable answer to the childcare crisis. Rosie Cox of Birkbeck, University of London, says the reason au pairs are cheap lies in the history of the au pair scheme.
The au pair scheme was developed formally in the post-war years, although it actually existed before that, at the beginning of the 20th century. And it was developed as a cultural exchange programme amongst European countries, which allowed young women, and when it was developed it was only women who were allowed to take part, to travel to live as an equal, which is the translation of au pair, with a family in another country. Au pairs were meant to provide help with household tasks in exchange for what was called, what it still is called, pocket money rather than pay. And the experience of living with a family, living in a foreign culture, and perfecting their language skills. The scheme was imagined as providing a small amount of extra household help to middle-class families who are facing the servant crisis, this terrible thing that came down on the middle classes after the Second World War, where they had to do their own washing up. But it also was seen as a way that middle-class young women would be given training in running a home. So it was seen as preparing au pairs for the life that they had ahead of them. They're only cheaper than collective care in a nursery or an after-school club or the work of a professional nanny, because what they do isn't recognised as work, and they quite often are employed in very poor conditions. And these poor conditions in the sector are justified through a discourse of cultural exchange and adventure for the au pairs.
One important part of the research was a detailed examination of 1,000 advertisements on the Gumtree website, which advertises everything from second-hand sofas to tree felling. Au pair ads are in a section on nannies, housekeepers and au pairs. Researcher Nikki Bush at Birkbeck details what the ads said.
31% of au pairs were asked to work for more than 25 hours a week. The average working week, including babysitting, was 38.7 hours a week, but there was big variation in this. The average pocket money offer was around £108 a week, and 14% offered an amount below the recommended £85 per week. Given that half weren't naming a figure, many people said in the ad, salary expectations, please give your salary expectations, or pay negotiable depending on how much cleaning you want to do, things like that. 33% wanted their au pair to care for a child under three, and 14% to care for a child under one. And again, almost a third asking for a child under three. Many of them were asking for an au pair to look after a two-year-old twins and a toddler, often a school-aged child and a toddler and a baby as well. So there was all these combinations of what people wanted in terms of childcare. Here are some examples. Any overtime will be paid at £5 an hour. There'll be babysitting and also some weekend work. Sometimes just morning or weekend if we go away without the children. And these children are one and four. Another example is, must be Ofsted registered. Highly responsible, enthusiastic, independent, flexible, experienced, resourceful, mature, loving, child-loving as well as loving, reliable, accountable, punctual, a good communicator. Your role is to help with homework and inspire academic and creative development, and to encourage physical activity and expression. This looks like an employment relationship. They're talking about overtime, our weekend work. Au pairs could be working for anything between 20 hours and 70 hours. Some were given no pocket money at all, so they were just board and lodging. Not all of them had their own room. Some ads said you'll be sharing a room with the child or you can sleep in the living room. Not all of them even lived with the host. Some had these complicated arrangements advertised where you'll be working for us, but you'll be living down the road, or you'll be living in with my aunt or something. Those working the longest hours were not necessarily the highest paid. The majority of au pair ads suggested that these people were not living in working conditions that fall within the guidance provided by the government in June 2014 and the guidance previously provided by the British Au Pairs Agencies Association.
Now listen to the recording again.
It's estimated that there are about 90,000 au pairs in the UK, though there are no official figures. That means tens of thousands of families from Land's End to John O'Groats having au pairs from all around the world looking after their children. A UK nursery place, if you can find one, costs at least £1,000 a month, that's $1,500, and for many families an au pair is the only affordable answer to the childcare crisis. Rosie Cox of Birkbeck, University of London, says the reason au pairs are cheap lies in the history of the au pair scheme.
The au pair scheme was developed formally in the post-war years, although it actually existed before that, at the beginning of the 20th century. And it was developed as a cultural exchange programme amongst European countries, which allowed young women, and when it was developed it was only women who were allowed to take part, to travel to live as an equal, which is the translation of au pair, with a family in another country. Au pairs were meant to provide help with household tasks in exchange for what was called, what it still is called, pocket money rather than pay. And the experience of living with a family, living in a foreign culture, and perfecting their language skills. The scheme was imagined as providing a small amount of extra household help to middle-class families who were facing the servant crisis, this terrible thing that came down on middle classes after the Second World War, where they had to do their own washing up. But it also was seen as a way that middle-class young women would be given training in running a home. So it was seen as preparing au pairs for the life that they had ahead of them. They're only cheaper than collective care in a nursery or an after-school club or the work of a professional nanny, because what they do isn't recognised as work, and they quite often are employed in very poor conditions. And these poor conditions in the sector are justified through a discourse of cultural exchange and adventure for the au pairs.
One important part of the research was a detailed examination of 1,000 advertisements on the Gumtree website, which advertises everything from second-hand sofas to tree felling. Au pair ads are in a section on nannies, housekeepers and au pairs. Researcher Nikki Bush at Birkbeck details what the ads said.
31% of au pairs were asked to work for more than 25 hours a week. The average working week, including babysitting, was 38.7 hours a week, but there was big variation in this. The average pocket money offered was around £108 a week, and 14% offered an amount below the recommended £85 per week. Given that half weren't naming a figure, many people said in the ad, salary expectations, please give your salary expectations, or pay negotiable depending on how much cleaning you want to do, things like that. 33% wanted their au pair to care for a child under three, and 14% to care for a child under one. And again, you know, almost a third asking for a child under three. Many of them were asking for an au pair to look after a two-year-old twins and a toddler, often a school-aged child and a toddler and a baby as well. So there was all these combinations of what people wanted in terms of childcare. Here are some examples. So any overtime will be paid at £5 an hour. There'll be babysitting and also some weekend work. Sometimes just morning or weekend if we go away without the children. And these children are one and four. Another example is, must be Ofsted registered. Highly responsible, enthusiastic, independent, flexible, experienced, resourceful, mature, loving, child-loving as well as loving, reliable, accountable, punctual, a good communicator. Your role is to help with homework and inspire academic and creative development and to encourage physical activity and expression. This looks like an employment relationship. They're talking about overtime, our weekend work. Au pairs could be working for anything between 20 hours and 70 hours. Some were given no pocket money at all, so it was just board and lodging. Not all of them had their own room. Some ads said you'll be sharing a room with the child or you can sleep in the living room. Not all of them even lived with the host. Some had these complicated arrangements advertised where you'll be working for us but you'll be living down the road, or you'll be living in with my aunt or something. Those working the longest hours were not necessarily the highest paid. The majority of au pair ads suggested that these people were not living in working conditions that fall within the guidance provided by the government in June 2014 and the guidance previously provided by the British Au Pairs Agencies Association.
This is the end of your listening comprehension test.